Hello and welcome to episode 80 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies, and our first show that's going to be an audio-only show. We are going to try a new thing for a little while and just focus on audio instead of the video and see how it goes. If you feel like leaving feedback about that, we'd love to hear your thoughts, so please do in the comments section. So, I am Perry Nemiroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Prochko and Angie Hahn.
Hi!
Hey, everybody. Just one note, we are going to continue to post the audio onto YouTube. So if that's how you're enjoying the podcast, you can continue to do so. You just won't have the video component.
You won't see our pretty faces, which right now, because we weren't planning on video, are not so pretty. So you're not missing out on anything, I promise.
Nope. I am full on Nicki Minaj tonight because no one sees this. They can't prove I'm not.
So this episode is going to be our summer wrap-up episode, and we are dividing it between a winner-loser discussion with things like superhero movies, you know, big nostalgia movies like Jurassic World and how that did. So we're going to jump into it first with the superhero movies, and Angie's going to take that.
All right. So surprisingly, one of the big losers this summer was superhero movies. Okay, so to be fair, Avengers Age of Ultron still did great money. Ant-Man, I think, turned out better than many people expected. But considering how much of our recent cinema has been, or mainstream, you know, blockbuster cinema has been dominated by superhero movies, it was kind of surprising this year to see that they didn't make as much of an impression as anyone, I think, really expected. Like, Avengers Age of Ultron, it still made a lot of money, but, you know, the fans didn't really seem to like it that much. Like, the press tour was a shit show. Joss Whedon basically came as close as he could to saying, "I fucking hated that experience," without actually saying that, because then he'd get in trouble.
Yeah, he almost apologized regularly for the whole movie, which was
weird. And, like, Ant-Man was a movie that, like, it was okay. It was a modest hit for them. I think it was maybe one of their lowest, if not their actual lowest grossing movie. And I felt like the reviews were mostly, oh, that wasn't as bad as it could have been. And then, of course, you guys all remember Fantastic Four, because that was very recent.
No one remembers Fantastic Four already. Yeah. That's the problem, is Fantastic Four has already been forgotten. You know, it's crazy, though, because, like, last summer, like, these movies still made a shit ton of money. Like, Avengers Age of Ultron
made... Not Fantastic Four, but the other one.
No, that's true. Avengers Age of Ultron made $1.4 billion, and that's a lot. But, like, last summer, Captain America, Winter Soldier, and Guardians of the Galaxy weren't just, like, didn't just do blockbuster business. They were, like, all we were talking about. They were dominating. There was, like, they were causing memes. Dancing Groot became a thing. There were breakout stars. Like, you know, superhero movies, and Marvel in particular, dominated last summer.
I think that people are too smart. Like, I think that one of the problems with having so many superhero movies is that people are really into it, and they're coming at such a quick rate at this point that people are, you know, people want quality movies. And I mean, look at the three movies we got this year compared to, especially last year, where they were insanely, they were good movies. Those are good
and
movies.
So different. They felt so completely different from other movies we had seen.
You know what? I'm kind of betting that it's kind of almost a natural lull that needs to happen, like a cycle within Marvel almost, where they pour so much time into the story here, and they're like,
so
oh, it's time to try something. It's time to try something different, and it just didn't work. But, like,
I don't think
next
they did
year
try something
they're...
different.
I think Ultron.
Ant-Man did. Ultron's problem was that it was a movie that's in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, so it had to connect to every other movie, and it just the whole thing was a shit show. It was a mess.
Well, my prediction is that this is a cycle. This was the lazy / let's try something different year, and next year I think we're going to be, like, back on point again.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, next year's slate looks promising. Like, I'm not like, you know, like saying, oh, this is the end of superhero movies. Not at all. I just think it's, you know, I feel like superhero movies lately have been as close to a sure bet as you can get in, you know, in the movies, especially the Marvel movies. Like, you know, each one, for a while there, it seemed like every single Marvel movie that came out, people were like, this is the best one yet. This one made the most money yet. So then it was interesting to see. This summer, as you said, it was a kind of a lull. I make no predictions about what it's going to be like next year. That's a whole other conversation.
Now, maybe this shows that the bubble is capable of bursting, and maybe this is the way it will burst at some point. You know,
if this fucking bubble bursts before we get a real female superhero movie, I'm going to lose my mind.
Well, that's already not possible, considering they have everything set through like 2020. Mm.
That is true. So out of curiosity, and don't, if you know, don't answer, but how much do you think Fantastic Four has made both domestically and worldwide? What are your guesses?
100 million?
Is that for domestic or worldwide?
I honestly have no clue. Don't even quote me on that. I just threw out the first number that came into my head.
Let's go domestic. We'll just guess domestic. We'll say Angie's is 100 million. Price and right rules.
Price is right rules.
Angie, if you want to change your thing, because I changed the rules halfway through, you're allowed.
No, it's okay. I'll go with that one.
I would say 60.
Okay, I just want to point out to people listening at home, the correct answer in this scenario should have been one, just because then you covered the gamut. Domestically,
okay,
I'm just
so
saying.
Now we're detouring so she can critique our strategy.
Guys, I watched a lot of Price is Right growing up. So domestically right now, Fantastic Four has made $52.6
million.
Huh. Wow.
That's it.
Does that include this weekend? Because yeah. I could be right if you add... Okay, then I'm not right.
Its opening weekend was more than half that. Opening weekend was 25.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I feel like the thing about, you know, if we're talking about the overall general trend in superhero movies, it kind of feels like what happened this year is, first of all, Avengers Age of Ultron to me... Oh, sorry, should we just wrap?
No, you can finish your thought.
You got so scared.
No, I can keep talking about this for, like, the rest of the chat, so we'll just cut it off here, then we can just move on.
I didn't mean to, like, cut off your thought. Yeah, I think it's...
No, because the thing that I was going to start was going to be a whole long conversation, so we'll
okay. Stop it. Well, maybe we'll probably come back to that, because there's a million goddamn superhero movies yet to come. So what's crazy is that we were talking about how, like, you know, superhero movies didn't do that well this summer, and to prove just how not well they've done, a big winner this summer is Universal. Universal Studios has actually made more money than Fox, Paramount, Sony, and Lionsgate combined, and they had no superhero movie. But what they did have working in their favor was Trainwreck, Furious 7, Pitch Perfect 2, Jurassic World, Minions, Straight Outta Compton. They also had Ted 2, but Ted 2 didn't do great. Ted 2 did fine, but no one's talking about it. But like, yeah, Trainwreck made $128 million worldwide. Fast and Furious is always just a boatload of money. That's $1.5 billion. Pitch Perfect 2, which is another female-fronted comedy, did $238 million. Like, this is outstanding. Jurassic World, of course. Jurassic World is like a whole other thing. That
Can
did
I talk
so
about
well.
That for 1 second?
Yeah.
Furious 7, I believe, set the record for the movie to hit $1 billion the fastest until Jurassic World came along a few weeks later and then
That's
beat
insane.
That record. So that is how well Universal is doing right
and
now.
And since then, Minions has also hit $1
billion. Mm-hmm.
So, like, they've been tearing it up. And I think it's really interesting because if you look at their slate, you know, there's...
Oh, and Straight Outta Compton did better than expected. Sorry.
Yeah, Straight Outta Compton did way better than expected. What's interesting is, like, this is a very diverse slate. Like, yeah, you have Jurassic World, which is none of us were super big on. And, like, yes, it's playing really hardcore to a fan base that already exists. But, like, Trainwreck was a risk for them. Pitch Perfect 2 was a movie that people expected to do well, but I don't think this well. This did really well.
Wow.
You know,
this year Universal crushed it compared to last year. Like, if you were wondering, I'm not sure if this is right because like the Box Office Mojo page isn't working quite right. But Neighbors was their highest grossing movie last year with 150 domestically.
Wow!
Really? Wow!
I mean, if this is one of their search features isn't working, so I altered the URL myself, so I might have screwed it up admittedly. But it said number one was Neighbors, then Ride Along, then Lucy.
Wow. Oh. Yeah, but I mean,
is that domestic or international?
These are domestic grosses.
Okay, as I was saying, because I remember Lucy did super well overseas too. Yeah, it's crazy. And I mean, the thing is, though, I think Universal this year took some chances. They had some safe bets with Jurassic World, but then like they
and Minions.
And Minions, yeah. Minions was, like, a totally safe bet. But, like, then they did something, like, Straight Outta Compton, which was a movie that was, like, getting not great press for a while because it was having a lot of production problems. And they really backed it. And, like, Trainwreck, I think Trainwreck, they were smart in that they jumped onto Amy Schumer at a time when it was good to jump on her. I made that seem weirdly sexual.
She would probably be fine with that.
Yeah, probably. But, like, this was kind of the year of Amy Schumer, which is awesome, because, like, I've been watching Inside Amy Schumer for a couple of years now, but it seems like this was the year a lot of people who had never heard of the show were, like, finding out about her in season 3, and, like, she was handling trolls with aplomb, the 12 angry men inside Amy Schumer, and it was, like, all of that played such a great lead-up, and then they showed Trainwreck at South by Southwest, where it was getting huge reviews, and then they finally opened, and it made crazy business, and she handled those junkets like a pro, like, even when people said really shitty things to her, like, it just really sold, and then she just had the coolest summer ever on a random tangent, where she became friends with Jennifer Lawrence, and just gets to be everything to everyone.
As you said, it's a really diverse slate, and, you know, I do mean that in terms of, like, you know, gender and race, but also just in that they're all really different movies. Like, I feel like so many studios during the summer, they bank on superhero movies and things that might as well be superhero movies, basically. So it was really interesting to see them come out with, like, oh yeah, we've got a musical, we've got a musical biopic, you know, we've got, like, a comedy. It's, like, not just, you know, the big action R-rated movies comedies that we associate with summer, and it has worked out great for them.
What did Universal bring to Comic-Con this year? Do you guys happen to remember?
I don't remember.
I'm just trying to figure out what, like, the trajectory. Were they there? Yeah, which is, like, a funny thing, you know? Like, the most successful studio of the year. Like, didn't even have a presence at, like, that event that's supposed to kind of, like, set the tone for so many months to come.
I love that. Like, they basically, it's crazy because Universal.
It was Crimson Peak. It was the legendary stuff.
Right.
That was theirs.
Right. So they were really building for fall because it was Crimson Peak and something was with Crimson Peak, but nothing that had opened yet.
Hey, you know, maybe that's the way to do it.
No complaints, man.
Use Comic-Con to have an even stronger fall rather than, you know, putting all your marketing money into
Way down the line. And I'm going to forget the studio off the top of my head and look it up while we're talking. But last summer, The Rock's Hercules did a thing at Comic-Con Paramount. And, like, that didn't help it at all. That movie just couldn't get anybody to pay attention.
But actually, didn't that movie come out, like, right during Comic-Con?
Yeah, it was really strange where they were like...
I feel like nothing that comes out the weekend of Comic-Con ever does that well.
Except for Minions this year, actually.
Because Minions was for a different crowd.
If you're selling it at Comic-Con right before it comes out, then it's really too late to build that much on buzz, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, Man from U.N.C.L.E. was there for Warner Brothers this year, but it was mostly because, you know, they already had Henry Cavill there.
And right. wasn't a thing that, like, none of them were interested in talking about it anyway? It probably wasn't such a great selling tool.
I remember seeing the photos, and they all look so bored, which is probably, honestly, just them being tired, because Comic-Con, is exhausting. I know I apologized to most of the people I interviewed for being tired, and they were like, it's cool, I haven't slept. And I was like, okay.
Some people are better at the Comic-Con panel thing than others. The other thing is, you know, maybe
Jesse Eisenberg.
Universal was smart not to be there because looking at their slate, like, for summer, they're not things that would necessarily, with the exception of, like, Jurassic World, they're not things that would play that well to a Comic-Con audience, and it's a waste of your time and money to go to Comic-Con if you're not going to cater to that specific audience.
It's funny because who knows how much money certain studios are spending on their superhero movies that are coming up, yet Universal didn't they not even bring Jurassic World to Comic-Con last year except to hand out some posters? And look at how much money this movie made. You know, maybe we should, I mean, unless nobody wants to go to Comic-Con anymore, maybe we should stop bashing the usefulness of Comic-Con.
I had an amazing time and I think all of the things I covered will be super popular forever.
Okay. Comic-Con is a great buzz builder, and it did a lot of great things this year, for example, for Deadpool and for Suicide Squad. I'm not knocking
that's
it.
True.
I'm saying,
no,
though,
that's
that
totally
it's a
true.
Great, you have to know the audience, and you have to be bringing something that the audience is actually going to be excited about. Otherwise, it's a waste of everyone's time.
I think you're right. Universal played well to that, because by bringing Crimson Peak, you bring Guillermo del Toro, who, like...
He's the king of Comic-Con.
Yeah, really. He's outstanding.
Yeah.
All right, so now we're going to move on to our third section, which is a section that has both winners and losers in it, and we're calling this the nostalgia section. So first off, let's talk a little bit about the losers, and I mean, clearly a loser is Terminator Genesis, because one, it sucked, and two, it made $155 million.
No, that was its budget.
That was its budget. Jeez. Yeah, 89 million domestic and 352 worldwide. Ooh. Man from U.N.C.L.E. made I can't believe I haven't looked at that number. Man from Uncle has only made $29 million to date. Christy, is that worldwide or domestic? What the fuck?
Let me have a double check, actually. I meant to make notes.
Oh, my God.
I know. And, you know, it's not necessarily a reflection of these being bad movies. Like,
Man from Uncle.
That's true. Perry's in the trailer for that.
I loved about that. Man from Uncle.
It shows how much my poll quote is.
You know what? It's Jesus. Been updated since I made these notes a day ago. It is now, that's 34 million domestic.
Well,
worldwide,
that's
it's 70 million.
Oy vey.
Yeah, all and right. For the record, the budget they're copping to is 75 million, which I think is bullshit.
I think it's bullshit too. The third one we have in this section is Poltergeist, another one that I loved and didn't do too well. That one has 95 million worldwide, 35 million 35 million budget. It was considered a flop that killed it, really.
Yeah,
I'm learning
that's
so many things
saying.
From your notes. Jesus.
I remember what they were talking about was the story that I had heard was the fact that the Poltergeist marketing so prominently featured a clown, which, by the way, isn't even a big part of the movie.
No.
But, you know, marketing counts for a big thing. And made them nervous about making it because it was going to have a clown. It's a dumb
We don't
reason.
Know that that's true, but that was the narrative that was
that's
built
the
up.
There were also
reason
other
ever.
Reasons. Like, I'm sure that's not the only reason, but it is. I don't think it helped.
I'm also very curious to know how much Poltergeist made on VOD and DVD, because I think horror movies in general, especially something like that, would probably make up a good amount of money right there.
I don't think anyone
those numbers
that movie
aren't
came
available.
Out.
No, that movie, that was a shame, because I remember I liked Poltergeist a lot.
It's
like,
fun.
I genuinely thought it was, it was fun, it was inventive, and, like, I was surprised that it just kind of seemed to come and go. Like, people didn't, after that weekend, no one was talking about it.
Yeah. Can we run down the winners real quick and then we can talk about them all
together?
Yeah,
let's do that.
So the winners, obviously, are in the nostalgia section. Remember that Jurassic World, like, 1.6 billion worldwide. Jesus. Mission
and they
Impossible.
Haven't even done the re-release yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mission Impossible Rogue Nation is absolutely killing it. It currently has 442 million worldwide. And then there's Straight Outta Compton, which has 119 million and growing. So those are some pretty solid winners right there. And I don't know if I love Jurassic World so much, but it was fun to watch. But, like, the other two are great, great movies, which is, like, another plus that great movies are making a lot of money.
I like that they're good movies and they're making a lot of money, but it's really interesting because I feel like so much of when studios plan things now is based on, oh, we need, like, a familiar name to, like, market off of. Like, it's, you know, like, you'll see over and over where they'll come out with a movie that didn't really need to be named after anything. Man from Uncle's a good example. Like, that you could have just had a spy movie set in the 60s. It didn't need to be named Man from Uncle, but I think that maybe sometimes they put more weight in the nostalgia factor than it really warrants, because as we've seen, there are movies, like, people like Man from Uncle back in the 60s, and people like Terminator, and people like Poltergeist, but they have to be, if you're going to try to bank off of that, it has to be something that people actually want to see a movie about today.
Well, also, Man from Uncle tried to play to teenagers, because they made a PG-13 movie called Man from Uncle, and it was like none of those kids knew that was a movie to begin, like, knew that was a thing to begin with. Like, my parents were like, oh, I remember that Man from Uncle was a thing, and I was like quizzing my mom on it mostly because I was like, what are you, like, I've never watched the show and I don't intend to, so tell me things. And I did laugh because she said I didn't watch it much, but one thing I did like was she said she thought the American guy was supposed to be the guy you have a crush on. She goes, but I always thought the Russian had Mystique. And I was like, agreed, mom, based on the movie. Agreed. So, I guess they got that
right. I don't
even
think half the people involved in the movie even, like, considered the fact that it was based on a TV show.
And
it was a bizarre choice.
It just did. It didn't, other than the name of the movie, it didn't really seem like a priority to, you know, even release a featurette, like, oh, running down, you know, the old shows and highlight moments. You would think they would do something like that, but they didn't really pay much attention to it.
Well, beyond nostalgia for the show, like, the movie has a nostalgia for 1960s movies. Like, it reminded me a lot of Audrey Hepburn stuff from the 60s. But again, like, I didn't feel like it played with that in a way that seemed engaging to people.
I feel like there was a movie there that could work, but I actually think that the title Man from Uncle maybe ended up being more of a liability than a benefit, because first of all, the people that they were targeting, which is most people that are alive right now, don't remember that show existed. I feel like a great many people had no idea that it was based on an existing IP.
And if you don't know that, then what the fuck does Man from U.N.C.L.E. mean?
Exactly. So then I think a lot of people just saw that title, saw that it was like some random, like they're just like, I don't know. It looks like a spy thing. It has something to do with uncles. I have no idea.
You know what really made me mad about that? You don't find out what the fuck U.N.C.L.E. is until the last scene, and then it's like through post-title, like,
and it
sizzle
didn't
reel.
Need to be there. There was no reason that movie needed to be called Man from U.N.C.L.E. But the other thing that I want to point out when we look over our winners and losers is that, you know, Terminator Genisys is an 80s thing, Poltergeist is an 80s thing, Man from U.N.C.L.E. is from even before that. But the things that did well were Minions, Mission Impossible, and Straight Outta Compton, which are all 90s things. I'm not sure if Mission Impossible was actually 1990s or like early 2000s, but it's like in that range.
I think it was 90s.
I think it was both.
I remember I had it on VHS, but like at that point where like I probably 96.
Okay. Yeah. So they're all solidly 90s things. So I feel like
Yeah, but it's also a 90s thing that's carried over into the 2000s. Like it was pretty fresh on everybody's mind. Especially this movie probably got a big bump from the fact that Ghost Protocol was the shit.
Oh, yeah, no, I absolutely agree, but I'm saying that Terminator Genisys and Poltergeist kind of did not speak strongly to the power at the box office of 80s nostalgia. That was more of my point.
Yeah, I think that's
and
fair.
And whereas Jurassic World and Straight Outta Compton were very, like, those are two things that people really associate with the 90s.
Which I guess would be a weird thing for some studios to consider who are still busy churning out, you know, more Friday the 13ths and Halloweens and... I mean, there's a lot of money being put into that kind of 80s nostalgia right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It's like one of those things where it's like, I don't mind nostalgia when I feel like you're paying tribute to it in the right way, but how to do that is kind of the mystery, you know? Because, like, I think what we're seeing in the films that were successful in this is they understood what people wanted to see. And I know in our Straight Outta Compton episode, we criticized a lot of the things Straight Outta Compton left out, but to their credit, they clearly know what their audience want. They knew how to play to that. And, you know, Jurassic World bums me out just because that movie.
I mean, like, Poltergeist was a movie that I remember basically everyone I know who actually was, like, had lingering affection for the original movie was, like, pissed off that there was a remake. You know, like, Jurassic World, people were like, oh, that's fun. I want to see more dinosaurs. Poltergeist, people were like, fuck that. Like, you leave that classic alone.
Yeah. Horror fans seem to get really angry about remakes in a way I don't think a lot of other genres get quite as riled about. But I think
which
that's
is weird because, like, as a horror fan, I have the exact opposite reaction. It's like, I get so excited about all the remakes, and then I'm like, oh, I'm embarrassed and I'm excited about it, you know?
I just generally feel like they took something that used to scare me as a kid and made it not scary, but it's I also am aware that a lot of the time it's not fair because when I was a child, I was really having a hard time understanding, you know, fiction and reality. So watching that stuff, you know, it affects you in a different way. But that's what I liked about this Poltergeist. I found this Poltergeist movie genuinely scary and in a way that the original really didn't because the original felt kind of hokey to me. Like, it was gross and it was weird and spooky, but, like, this one actually made me, like, a fucking tree rips a child out of his room and, like, throws him around. Like, that was upsetting.
I agree, right. But I also think that this just turned into a Poltergeist review, which
yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So we'll wrap up by saying that Man from U.N.C.L.E. and Poltergeist shouldn't have been losers, so go check those out if you have some free time. But, like, everything else that we like are winners, so yay. And with that, that's a wrap on episode 80 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You can catch the audio of this podcast now on iTunes, where we would love for you to subscribe to the podcast and rate and comment over there. You can also catch us on our website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on Twitter, @popcornprosecco. Please like us on Facebook. And you can also still catch us on our YouTube channel and just listen to the audio portion of the podcast. We'll put a pretty picture up there for you. And then all three of us are all over the internet as well. Christy, do you want to take it first?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter, @ChristyPutchko, and I write all over the web, so you can find my career highlights on decadentcriminals.com. And for your ease, all that stuff will be below in the comments section or the info section, depending on if you're on iTunes or YouTube.
Angie?
You can find me on Twitter, @AJHAN, and I write for slashfilm.com.
And you can catch my writing on Collider.com, and my Twitter handle is PNemiroff. So thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. He belongs to the land.